Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast with Bhairav Patel and Alan Clark.
Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, where we tackle the practical challenges that startup founders and small business owners face and give our own unvarnished opinions. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the Managing Director at Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, where we partner with small businesses and startup founders to help them define and build their tech vision.
And I'm Alan Clark. I'm the founder of the Business Growth Partnership, and we work with high potential businesses to help them unblock the blockages that are preventing them from reaching their full potential.
Welcome, everybody, to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast. Today, I'm with Alan, and we're going to talk about budgeting. I think it's not the most exciting or sexiest topic, but really what I was looking to get out of this podcast was to say, okay, when you're running a business, how do you really budget or know how much you should spend on various things? And now that we're kind of moving into this recession period, you know, what should we really be tightening on? Because there's so many myths out there. Well, I wouldn't say myths, but there's so much advice that goes on out there about, you know, during downtimes, cut down on marketing. And, you know, I guess the both of us will have been through two or three different up and down cycles. So it'd be good to kind of, at least if you had to get, test your knowledge and experience on this area, and especially around like marketing budgets, because we're going again through this period in time where we're refocusing our marketing, trying to figure out how much should we really spend on it. And similarly, when I get companies coming to me for tech, they're constantly asking me, you know, how much should I spend on tech? And I've seen some things on LinkedIn recently where people in tech and investors have cried out people are spending too much on tech. And I'm kind of a bit skeptical of that. But anyway, Alan, when you first started, you know, Team Rock, and you obviously created a budget, where were you spending most of your money?
We had to spend most of our money on content creation.
Right.
On making stuff, making the product that people would actually pay for. Because we recognize there's absolutely no point in bringing lots of customers in to an empty shell. Because they would have a look and go, there's nothing there that is of value. Why would I want to spend money here? So that was the absolute first priority of all. And I think that core idea is the same for absolutely every business. Do not scrimp on whatever it is that provides the value that your customers will actually want to pay for. Because if you do, and you go out with something that is not a value add, it doesn't make their lives better, that they don't think that's worth paying for. So have a look at your business, make a negative decision, and it's really, really, really hard to get them back. So, well, you know, irrespective of what the economic climate is, I believe firmly that the first thing every business has got to do is make sure it is delivering something worth paying for. And that's before you get involved in advertising, marketing, sales channels, anything. Because if it's not worth buying, there's no point in taking it to the market.
So when you started out, did you have multiple budgets in the sense that did you have a tactical first 6 months budget, then 6 months and beyond, and were you doing the whole kind of, were you doing like this traditional 1 year budget life cycle?
Or did
you?
Well, we were a little bit unusual, bearing in mind that our startup started by buying an operating business. So we knew part of our rationale for buying that was we bought a content creation engine in the business, in the magazines, and the very highly regarded magazines that we bought. But even within that, we knew that we then had to curate better what it did and make it for easier for customers to recognize where the value was. We also got an existing customer base that wasn't being terribly well served. So I think there was not a great deal of there wasn't a lot of parallels to your traditional startup, let's make something and take it to the market. That said, And the work that I do now, I've had a lot of exposure to that. And the challenge we have there is it seldom does it hit the sweet spot. Usually it goes to one extreme or the other, which is rushing something to the market that isn't actually even an MVP. You know, normally we talk about MVPs in the world of technology, but in whatever it is your business does, the minimum viable version of your offer. Often people rush to the market with something that's way earlier than that. And then the customers that they want to attract look at it and go, this is a million miles away from solving the issues I have, so it's an easy no. And then they get disheartened. Or the other one, which almost happens equally as often, is, hold on, version 4.6 will be ready soon. Let's not launch anything until we've made it as great as we can. And by that point, so much time, effort, money, angst, stress, anxiety has been brought to it that actually the business is imploding before it's even gone to the market. So one of the real skills is getting that middle bit right. Make sure there's enough there.
So that's interesting, right? So I think I've set two sets of companies I've met recently, and two of them are in the fintech sector, and they've managed to be ahead of, so they've fulfilled their year's targets in the first 6 months. And maybe you could say the targets weren't ambitious enough, but actually they were fairly ambitious, without any technology, without any marketing, without anything, using the existing contracts, Excel, pen and paper, just to push through deals. And they managed to get their commission and everything worked out well. And they can then use the money that they've built up as their seed funding for themselves to go and then develop more, you know, tech or whatever it is that they need to streamline themselves.
So what were they selling?
Well, it was more along the lines of they were already doing deals and financing deals, right? So they were able to kind of place funds with businesses and then take the fees without having to go and actually have huge amounts of technology. And this is stuff that people have been doing for centuries without having to have a huge amount of tech. And the second one was a lady that I interviewed for my podcast, where she started off with solving a problem that she obviously had and was very interested in. And because she was part of communities of people who had similar problems, when she launched her product, she was able to kind of talk immediately to thousands of people and then get them to test it and prove it and improve it. Which I thought was very, very, I mean, that's, and this is not the first person, obviously, I've spoken to you that does that, but I find it very rare that companies that do that. But whereas the ones who do have such a great starting point, right? And then budgets become a bit clearer. So what you should spend in a place becomes much clearer because you're being much more tactical then, rather than going out with a great unknown.
What I hear there is that first business that founded and carried on doing what it was doing anyway, and made cash to build up enough reserves to then go and innovate and create. That's a startup, that's the creation of a business. But not the kind of businesses that we are certainly talking about, but your innovation-led businesses. So it started up just doing what it did and then became an innovation business. The second one, I think, sounds like one of those perfect case studies of, if you can, this is how to do it. Because it sounds like that lady took to the market what I was talking about, something that actually added value, that addressed the problem. As an MVP, it was good enough. Might not have been perfect, but it was good enough that people were happy to buy it, bought into it, and then understood one can be even better. And that is almost like the dream innovation cycle scenario, where your customers, real life users of what it is you sell, what you're interested in, are driving the innovation because they're bought into what you do. Now that's possible with a highly engaged market customer base who are willing to be involved and give feedback and feel, when I say invested, I don't mean necessarily financially or equity invested, but emotionally invested in, yeah, I want to help make this work. It's a hell of a lot harder to do that when your business is about modeling cash flows.
True. And I guess we kind of diverged off the original question, right? And I still want to get back to that because
absolutely.
Because I still think it's...
Let me bring it back to you. I think this is exactly it. When are you starting your business in a boom, in a recession, in a downturn, in a whatever? The very core of everything you spend money on must be getting your product or service right. So no matter what you do, if you take a suboptimal or just a poor product or service to market, you're not going to succeed. And you can't shrimp on that. If it's not good enough, it's not good enough. If it doesn't address the problem, it doesn't address the problem. If it costs $1 million to solve, it costs $1 million to solve. If you can solve it for $10,000, you can solve it for $10,000. It doesn't matter whether there's a recession, a boom, or whatever. You know, one of the mistakes lots of businesses make in boom time is spending $1 million on a problem that only costs $100,000. So the money was there. And we took it, and we spent it, and we drove about in flash cars, and we gave away lots more of our business than we needed to, or whatever. You get the point I'm making. Some of the really shrewd people I see, where the money is tight and money is plentiful, they are absolutely on every penny in their business. Because if you mind the pennies, the pounds look after themselves, certainly when you're small. And that is about driving the absolute maximum out of everything that you put into that business. Which is where bootstrapping is actually a really, really positive place to be. It might not sound the sexiest, oh yeah, we went out and raised loads of money. But when you're bootstrapping, you recognize the value of every penny your business is spending. Do we really need that flash office? Or actually, are we okay where we are? Because all of that is my money. To the end of the day, it's all your money, whether you put it in or somebody else put it in.
And so this is where it becomes quite difficult for people who have a pot of money to figure out how much should I be spending on various things. And I know you mentioned it takes $10,000 to solve the problem, but the question then becomes, what do you mean by solving the problem? Is solving the problem actually building the technology? Is it producing content to help people understand the issues and the solutions? Is it the advertising to get people aware of what you're doing? And I think that's where people struggle, right? It's that if you've got a pot of $50,000 and you know that you want to get this X, Y, and Z things done, and then you're going to people and tech guy says it's going to cost you $50,000, $40,000 to do this, and the marketing guy is going to say, well, it's going to cost you $30,000 to do that, and you're already, $10,000 over. What do you do? And how do you then deal with that?
I think that's incredibly straightforward.
Get more money.
Well, it is. The worst mistake anybody is going to make is sitting down at the very beginning and working out, this is what we need to do. And this is what we think it's going to cost. And not just making that up yourself, but do the due diligence. Talk to investors, professors, accountants, lawyers, other entrepreneurs, people that have done it before, and get a good idea. I don't mean a tight budget to the pounds and pence, but what is it going to cost to do this? Because if it's a big innovation and development that involves lots of real research and development, By that I mean, you know, not innovation. Research and development, which for me means we're going to try something and it might not actually ever work. And we lose, we will never, not we lose, we will never recoup all the money we put into it. That's real R&D. And that's why it's high risk. Innovation, for me, is largely about making something better. Well, you're much more likely to succeed. They cost different amounts of money. And if we're trying to solve a massive problem, it usually takes more money and time. If we're looking to make a marginal improvement, but still make something better, it's usually easier to do. And if the, and I'm just making notional numbers up here. If after doing that, you establish that it's going to cost $100,000, $1 million, or $10 million. If you don't have a number near that, you ain't going to do it. You're going to lose it all. Because if it costs, if it needs $10 million, whatever it's to do, and you've only got $8 million and you run out after $8 million, you've lost it all and never finished the job. So I think this is absolute essential nature really early on about having a credible financial plan so you know what it looks like. And the reality for most businesses, and this is why we talk about things like pre-seed, seed, series A, series B, series C, is it's a build over time. And you won't have all the money at once, but you've got to know what it costs to get to each step. And if you can meet that, then you can open up the next step. The madness is going out with $10,000 to do a $100,000 job and think you're ever actually going to do it.
But, so this I agree with, and of course, you know, everything done in stages, but you've got a kind of a clash here, right? So let's say, for example, you come to, as businesses do, you come to Atom to say, we want to build this. We can go back and say, yes, we think it's going to cost X. And actually, here are three other companies. Go to those companies. Some will say it's going to cost X minus 10. Yep. Some will say X plus 10, right? Fine. At least you've got a band of what you think it's going to be. But then when you go to a marketing company and you try and talk to a marketing business, and then they'll say, well, it's going to be, we don't know, and we do this and that and the other. And it's all, and, you know, the return on investment is unclear because, you know, we talk about cost of acquisition and we call cost of, you know, cost of churn and all these kinds of things. And then it's where it becomes this kind of wonderfully gray, murky area. And so then, you know, how do you advise the entrepreneurs on that?
I would say, and unfortunately, coming from the world of marketing, you've got to find your way out of the piranha and into the good fish. Because there's so many charlatans out there. You've got to actually do your due diligence and make sure that the people you're speaking to are credible. The reality of marketing is, if anybody says, I guarantee this will happen, don't talk to them. Because you can't guarantee. There is no magic formula for the overall task of marketing. There's little areas where, yeah, there can be knowledge and insight. So this is where strategy in that area is the most important thing you're buying, to make sure you're getting the right guidance and direction that is aligned to your business plan. I'm just doing exactly this exercise right now. Got in to do some work around marketing. And when I started the meeting up, I said, well, what actually are the business deliverables? Well, just sell more stuff. But can't do that. We need to be more clear on exactly what we want to sell to whom at what margin. And that comes from your business plan. Well, that's a bit unclear at the moment. But why don't we sort that out? The big plan, the big idea, the big roadmap. And then we can work out how this tool can help make it happen. And again, in that, this is where we say, if you want to win the world, the global market, and your budget is a one-year-old graduate in 10 grand, mate, it ain't happening. If you want to do a beachhead incision into a particular area, then let's look at that and let's see if that's viable. Because if it's not, don't waste 10 grand. You might as well keep that. Or you need to go and find more money, more resources. Don't forget the money, you don't have to be throwing money at it. You have to get the right resource to do the job that you need to do.
All right, so I know we're probably nearing the end. And before we do that, I want to touch on what, again, another thing that I raised at the beginning. So during this period where, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom and people talking about recession and, you know, cost of living crisis, et cetera, you know, should businesses be cutting back, or should businesses be sticking to their budget and saying, well, actually, I believe that if I still spend, I will still get the returns? Or would you suggest that, I mean, that companies should be reviewing, but actually be reviewing on a more tactical basis? They shouldn't be looking at it as like a 6-month thing. They should be saying, okay, how is the market responding each month, month to month?
This is where having a proper financial model, not just a financial plan. So by model, what I mean is having something where you can plug in the variables and look and see what impact does that have in the medium to long term. So, you know, without getting into the detail on it, that's a big integrated Excel spreadsheet. So if you look at, well, if we were to cut CapEx in the short term and not invest in that machinery, what does that actually mean for our ability to generate sales further down the line? If we were to cut back on research and development spend, if we were to not hire those additional sales heads, what does that mean later on? And do the scenario planning on this to look at what if we do this, what if we do that. I think one of the things, certainly in the startup space and the new business creation space, there is never a bad time to do it. And if your idea is compelling and investable, then you will always find the resources to do it. There will always be investors looking to invest. It's the nature of the game. However, it may be a little harder because you may be a little bit more cautious. Although that's not actually always a direct correlation. Because sometimes they're looking for places to put the cash that they've taken out of the market. But if you can develop a compelling proposition and validate it externally, there's always a good time. And the budget will be what the budget is.
Interesting. So I think what we do at Atom is we always, every month end, I'm always modeling what's going on over the next year, right? So exactly. We have an 18-month model, and I do that during the good times and the bad times, because you never know, right? And you always assess the risk of losing clients and what new ones might be coming in the pipeline month to month, because obviously, you know, you have a very good idea. And so we always have that management discussion once a month, just to say, okay, if this goes wrong, what's our plan? How are we going to get out of that? What do we cut now? I think we're at the situation where it becomes difficult to cut when we're very lean, but I think it does make you think that, okay, then maybe the concept, rather than cutting expansion, is a valid option if it doesn't cost us huge amounts. So in the sense that in a downturn, it's if we're able to spread ourselves geographically or enter new territories and markets that we weren't really concentrating on because, you know, we were okay where we were, that's a valid way of actually looking at it rather than to say it costs.
I think this is an interesting point when you get into when you create the idea and you lay out the route map That's all well and good. But the reality is, day in, day out, month in, month out, you've got to manage along that route. And managers need to manage. And you need to address with the reality of the here and now. Irrespective of what that route map says, you know, route maps tend to be developed almost to the exclusion of the everyday. But managing a business is about the everyday. Leadership is about the route map. But managing is about, well, what do I do if the cost of the staff has gone up then? The cost of heating the office. You know, personally, I think we're just in a blip on energy. Because it will all settle down again and I won't be paying £500 a month to heat my house when it used to go and be 150. But I'm just going to get over that. And that is the reality of managing your business. And that's where, if it's going to cost a certain amount, that's where it goes.
But I think I agree with you. It's probably going to be a blip on the energy crisis. But I think that it's such a massive shock. You know, one of the places down the road from us, the stationery shop, that their bill's gone from £5,000 to £35,000 in the year, right? And that's a massive hit to take for any business.
Yeah. Cause,
you know, where do you find an extra £30,000 if your revenue's not going to be that high? So I think that's the thing, right? Where it becomes a big hole in your cash, or it becomes a minus in your cash. What do you do and how do you get out of that? But that's not necessarily a startup.
I was going to say that's another conversation about managing in the moment. Because you're right, there are these curveballs that come in. And again, a whole podcast on this. But sometimes the right thing to do is just stop right now. And either get out or conserve what we have and ice until the moment comes when we can restart and move forward. I think there's a lot of businesses out there with the cost of living, cost of business crisis right now who are going to do really well just to conserve where they are. But the unfortunate reality of that is that's just what it costs to do business. And if you don't have it, you don't have it. And all the angst and worry and stress in the world isn't going to solve that fundamental issue.
No, I agree. All right, so I think, I think what we've done today is actually show that it's not about the downturn, really. It's about effectively managing your business on a day-to-day basis or month-to-month basis without really necessarily considering the ups and downs. Obviously, you do need to do that. But I think if you are, again, know your numbers, you're on top of things, and you know your market well, these are things you can manage quite happily. Though maybe we're too optimistic. I don't know. But it'll be good to actually get some feedback from people on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about reality. It's about being real. It costs what it costs, and there are times when you simply have to accept that and work in that parameter.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Bye for now.
Many thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast today. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, all the main podcasting sites. And if you'd like to learn more from us, you can contact Alan. He's alan@tbgp.co.uk. And you can find me at info@atomcto.com.